All right, welcome to the Operators Pod, episode 54. It is myself, Sean, and Jason. Today we are talking all things TikTok, everybody's favorite topic from the last week. We're going to get into what's happening, what do we think is going to happen, how should you prepare as a brand. Let's get into it.
Yeah. You know, we're in a lot of litigation, and anytime there's like a government judge or agency, like they're so worked, and like the deadline will be, we had a deadline that was March 15th, and all of the arguments stopped in November, and I'm like, oh, well, he can sign the paper whenever, right? And then he didn't sign it until the last hour on March 15th, and I'm like, I asked my attorneys, I'm like, why is he so late? And they look me in the face, and they're like, if you asked him why he was late, he would be like, I'm exactly on time. Like, that's just the way the whole system is designed to operate, is exactly on time. So that sucks, man. Glad you're going to get billed in.
It's like China. It's like payables, right? Like, it's crazy. I have so many people at the company complaining about vendors not getting paid fast enough. And sometimes they're right, but most of the time it's like, wait a minute. We got this bill like a week and a half ago. Like, don't you know that real companies have an AP cycle? Like, 30 days is fast.
Dude, we're on a 30-day cycle, and every single vendor, we tell them that up front. Like, I'm not breaking my company's processes for this one person.
And 30 is fast. I mean, like, if it gets to 45 days, I mean, I don't know. Sean, you sign off on every freaking bill.
Yeah.
I don't know how that – tell me how that works for you.
Well – no, you bring up a good point that like accounts payable, people get so upset. They're like, oh, like vendors are like, why aren't you paying me? Pay me whatever. But like, I'm paying you to whatever terms are in the invoice. So like, if you invoice at net 30 or net 45 or net 15, that's what we're going to pay you at, right? Uh-huh. Like, if you hand me an invoice, we have a rule that like it can't be due at receipt. Like, it's just, it breaks systems or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, and I've been at very large companies, or I've interacted with large companies where it's net 90 is like a common thing, which, yeah, because to stop fraud, there has to be like so many levels of like approval, and like there's just accounting is a big slog where they want to triple check everything. But yeah, any invoice leaving the business, I personally sign off, because it just makes people think twice about submitting shitty invoices for services we don't need.
I love to get that call from Sean, or that Slack from Sean about the
dude. I'll
service you and me.
Yeah, I'll send over a screenshot. Like, we got an invoice for $30,000. I'm like, I don't value this service $30,000. Tell them I'm not paying them. It's like,
yeah. Going back to your litigation point, Sean. Though, this is something that came up. There was a little event last week in LA, and Nick Sharma was there, and he asked me to come hang. And then David showed up. It was really nice to see David. And there was this business there. They do these really cool, it's a women-owned company, these really cool strapless, backless bras. Like, I don't know how they do it. I did not inspect anything. But it's really cool. They're based in LA. Really nice. I met like the founder and another person that works for them. And they were asking a lot about copycats and litigation, and they've got patents, and they were asking about, you know, are you able to stop them at the entry point? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should at some point, because you've spent so much time on this, I know we've talked about it a little bit on the pod, but I think going into more detail on like the whole story of going after copycats the way you have done it, very I would say, you, I don't know if the word is unique, but very creative. You've taken a very creative approach in going after them on the international front. A lot of people seem to care about this issue.
Yeah, well, I'll give everybody a quick primer, because I think it might tie into the topic of the day, TikTok. Right?
It is.
I think
it's perfect.
I think it'll tie in. The quick primer is, there are knockoffs, and then there's infringers, right? So a knockoff is someone trying to sell a knockoff Ridge wallet. So if they're passing it off with our logo or our trademarks or our terms and deceiving customers, that is very, very easy to stop, Okay. All of the infrastructure is built around stopping counterfeit goods. The FBI will get involved. Amazon will take them down. And tied with that, trademark infringement is the easiest thing to stop. And there's Amazon will night and day quickly take down every single trademark infringer, right? That's why trademarks are actually probably the most important level of IP to get, just around terms, anything that's like very important to you, because it's black and white and so easy to prove. Okay. Then there's infringers. And if we're talking about patent infringers, it's incredibly difficult to prove. Okay. So there's two levels of patent infringement. There's design patents, which is easier to prove because you can show a layman two photos and be like, do these things look similar to you? And awesome. Yep. That's pretty easy to prove. Then there's utility patents, which are supposed to be more powerful, but it is describing the physical world in words only. And it is very difficult to prove. Okay. Amazon has a thing called Apex. They changed the name, but like you have to prove to someone that something infringes your utility patent with all of these claims. So needless to say, you have to really take a hard look if what level of enforcement makes sense for your business. We should all try to stop counterfeit goods, right? That's very easy to stop. We should all protect our trademarks. That's very easy to stop. Maybe you protect design patents, but unless you have an idea of how you're going to make your money back from utility patents, like I've spent probably $3 or $4 million enforcing utility patents at this point. And it would only make sense if I was going to go after licensing agreements with these people and they have to start paying me money, right? But none of these people have any money. And like, you know, patent trolls get a bad rap, but they have a utility patent and they're going after people for 10 or 50 grand a pop. And that's like their whole business, right? They get a good utility patent and they're like, if you don't just pay the fee, we're going to make you litigate for fucking ever. But how can you enforce a utility patent? Quick 30-second pitch. If you fail Apex on Amazon, which is an out-of-court system, very quick, very dirty, 6 or 8 weeks, the only other option is a district court case, okay, which will take 2 to 3 years to finally wrap up. Or if you're a very special company, you can have the federal government help you out, the International Trade Commission. That's what I did. That costs $1 million, and they've only issued 30 GEOs in the past however long. You can get a limited exclusion order way easier. So if you have one or two big infringers that you just want to stop, they do 300 of those a year or whatever. So you have to be a domestic company with a big domestic presence. You have to be economically important to America, and you have to show that a foreign entity is fucking you over in some way, and the International Trade Commission will help you out. So it's a quick 30-second primer. I don't know if you guys have anything else you want to talk about there.
No, it's a good, it's actually a good intro into what we want to talk today about, right? We want to talk about TikTok, which is a foreign entity who has clearly pissed a bunch of people off because the bill is now real. I think I saw that Biden signed it into, like he actually signed it. So it is now signed. Lots of, Jason, I don't know how up to speed you are on the legal side of this, but like there's lots of talk about, is this even legal? Can they do this in America? I mean, I think there's like two ways to look at this, right? One, people are calling this a ban. I think technically it's a forced divestiture, like a forced sale, which might just be called a ban because there's a big question of like, will China actually let TikTok be sold with the algorithm? Like that's the key thing here, right? I think Sean, you and I have talked about this. You know, and then the other side of this is what's the impact on operators, brands, creators? Like how should everybody be thinking about this? So there's like the, is this even going to happen part? And then if it does, how is everyone thinking about it? And Sean, I don't know how much time you've put into this because you're now with what you've done with Marquez, like you're very firmly going into this creator world.
Well, we have a real lawyer on the call. So Jason, I mean, the challenge will be if this happens or not based around the First Amendment right. So Citizens United makes companies people. So are we infringing on TikTok's First Amendment right to speak and reach Americans?
We've been doing so much international expansion lately. I was just getting some, you know, we just actually launched our Mother's Day sale, and someone was hitting me up about Canada, how Canada is crushing. And we just had so much going on. We had a new apron drop. We had our Mother's Day sale. We've got sales in all these different countries going on around Mother's Day. And we're just looking at how Fulfill just crushed it for us. And I was just thinking about when you expand overseas brands, you need to make sure that you're able to handle, you know, the logistics, inventory, being able to introduce new channels, integrations, 3PLs, like being able to send new orders quickly. Whether they're expanding to new territories in the States or outside new channels. I mean, it's amazing how easily we've been able to stand up new stuff in our business, and our business is big now. Fulfill has been so easy to integrate with the EDI, you know, visibility into everything, visibility into our orders, our warehouse management. I have people asking about NetSuite for WMS in some of our chats. And I'm just like, what are you thinking? Like, do you really want to go deeper down the NetSuite rabbit hole? So kudos to Fulfill. That said, I need to go to them and I need to get some more users and I want a good deal. Listen, my constitutional law studies occurred. I graduated law school in 1997. Okay, so yeah, I'm a recovering lawyer. I will say this, the US legal system, you pass laws, right? People will try to, they'll file a case in federal court, either a First Amendment case or some other like commerce related case. It'll go to federal court. It'll get fought about. It'll get appealed. And it will take, you know, it should take quite some time. I mean, they can fast track it. But I guess the question is really like once it's passed, how does it make its way through the legal system? And like, is the damage done? Like, how can they really shut this thing down before it gets time to get through the legal system? I think that's the concern. I do think there's a really good shot going through the legal system, as Sean said, that there's someone out there, some judge out there that will have a sympathetic ear to TikTok and really the government just sort of, like they're just going after, they just like anything, right? Like the government, some government body has decided, hey, we're going after this, just like they go after a lot of things. And, you know, I think it's very hard to predict what's going to happen here.
Yeah. So I'm not a lawyer, but they get to basically choose where they file it. So they can choose a judge that is more likely to grant a TRO because if a law is signed, they are in violation of the law, right? Like the law is real until proven otherwise. And that's one of the challenges is that like the law says they have 270 days to file it. And that means they need a court order before 270 days. And that means you have to take something. This will be appealed and challenged. It has to go from not being a court case to a ruling at the Supreme Court in 270 days, or they need a judgment saying that they have more time. So I think in all likelihood, there is a structured asset sale for the shell of TikTok where the users and the logo and the IP go to a new entity and they get $50 billion or whatever and the algorithms stay. And the trade war with China just ratchets up one or two notches. But Matt, what's your take?
I mean, look, we started this, we were chatting about Jason's taking 5 months to get local paperwork to build a house, to do a renovation, because government's slow. I find it incredibly interesting that the government is very fast on this subject at a federal level, like the most dysfunctional level of government has moved with pretty decent speed to make this happen. And bipartisan.
It will do. It's the modern American Senate process that every bill is just put together because it was the TikTok banning bill, the Taiwan funding bill.
Yeah,
the
Ukraine. They just stuck it all together.
Yeah.
But I do find like legal is legal. I'm not a lawyer. It takes forever. Anything involving government takes forever. this is moving with at pretty alarming speed. They set a 270-day timeline to sell a company this size in a country that you're not allowed to buy or sell companies anymore. Like, let's be honest, like, who's buying this thing?
Yeah. Well, that is the one bright spot, is that if they're forced by law to sell, antitrust has to get out of the way. It's like the argument would be like,
I mean, that makes reasonable sense.
Yeah.
But is that going to happen? Like, I, you know, the part of me just looks at this and says, like, this is just a grace, like a not so graceful way to just say, like, get out. They want to go. You know, can you get a deal done that fast? Is the company even worth $50 billion without the algorithm? You know, like, if Walmart was to show up and buy this thing, is that worth $50 billion to Walmart?
Yeah. And that's why I got into a big debate on Twitter with some people, where I think I said it would clear for 20 billion to 75 or something. Like,
yeah.
And everyone's like, no, it's worth hundreds and 200 or 300. I'm like, dude, well, one, TikTok has not proven it can monetize well. TikTok's revenue last year was $14 billion or whatever.
Right.
And Google's Q1 revenue was $90 billion or something. Like, it's just like,
I think the question I have is what, like, should brands be, should they be reacting to this at this point, or is it steady as she goes on the channel? Like, cause look, we're all in the business as entrepreneurs, as operators of, we make decisions around probabilities every day, and we do it with very little information. That's kind of the job for companies our size. So this is new information coming in. And if you are building in the channel, you now have to make a decision here. Like, do you continue to invest resources in the channel, or like nothing is going to change? Cause you're making a bet then that somebody will buy it, it will stick around, all good. Or other side.
Well, Jason has the largest content team probably on earth. I mean, this guy's rivaling, you know, CNN. But you're shooting content to be, you know, basically evergreen and on any platform. Yeah. And is that just like how you're going to navigate TikTok?
Well, look, I think you have to diversify regardless. You know, we have a very diverse media mix. We're doing a ton on TV lately. TikTok is definitely important to us, but if TikTok goes away tomorrow, I think it will have a minimal impact on our business. I think that it's just, if you're building a business that's like really, really, really TikTok focused, at a brand that's, or just a business that's really leveraging TikTok to really drive your business and your marketing, I think, yeah, you gotta be pretty scared right now. But I think most of us are, like we've already talked about, we're a big Meta spender. We're big Google, TV, TikTok, Twitter. It's all in the mix. It's quite possible that TikTok is just like, you know what? All right, we're not, you know, we're just not able to do this in the US anymore, and we'll just take our ball and go home. I mean, it's going to hurt a lot of people, right? It's going to hurt a lot of Americans who leverage TikTok to make money. But it could very well happen that way. I think it's just another example of how you have to have risk mitigation strategies at your business. And, you know, if you have a single point of failure in your business, and if you really like, if TikTok is that big, like, look, you know, I think Ridge would be in the same position. I mean, TikTok is important, but I don't think TikTok is going to have a massive impact on Ridge.
Yeah. What I wanted to say is that TikTok is the least unique platform. So it has 170 million Americans on there, the same ones that are also on Instagram or Snapchat or YouTube. So there's no unique user graph, unlike a Twitter, where like the reason Twitter or LinkedIn are special is because they have a unique user graph. Those people are only on those platforms. Additionally, the algorithm is way, way better than other algorithms, right? I deleted TikTok because I'm like, oh, if there's a band coming, like I should just see what the other apps are like. YouTube Shorts is way worse. And the big thing about YouTube Shorts that is worse is that YouTube Shorts has YouTubers on it. TikTok has everybody creating content. So there's just way more micro content being created. And those, the big learning curve will be getting those people to create content on new platforms, right? There's a lot of people who just like have TikTok audiences and put their videos only on TikTok. And like, it has a little bit of that Vine magic where like Vine was just normal people putting videos and it was very, very funny because of that. But the reason why I think TikTok is a unique asset, right? It's easy to duplicate, is that there's a lot of creators on there, but they don't pay very well at all, right? Like if YouTube went away, millions of people, or not millions, but maybe 100,000 people would lose their job because like YouTube pays so much that like there's infrastructure built around it. And the content can be repurposed in three or four places. And I think it will create a void if it actually goes away, that like there'll just be a new fast growing app, right? People, Vine will just launch or something.
Oh, that's interesting. Could you argue, Sean, the side of this, which is you should just keep investing in TikTok? Like, I get the diversity argument. I think all of us would make that argument. But like, there's a lot, most brands, most companies being built on any platform, they only have one. Like, there's at the size, like people listening to the show, they're at a size and scale where like they're all in on one platform. So the people who are all in on TikTok, what is the argument to continue to push and go all in? What do they do if it, either way, either outcome, what happens?
Well, they should go all in on short form video and get really good at that and just start repurposing in other places, because short form video will not be going away. It is brain drugs and people love it. And I think it'll be the main way of internet consumption for years and years to come. Like, what's going to replace short form video? Like, I don't think anything. So TikTok is a short form video platform. Really, who this is going to hurt is people who are very good at TikTok shops. And there's not that many of them. I mean, there's maybe 100 brands or 300 brands that are actually driving meaningful, impactful revenue off of TikTok shops right now. We know some of them, and like the GMV of a top brand, a top 10 brand, a top 30 brand is like 100K a week, which is like, it's like, that's a lot of money. But like, you know, Amazon, the top brand, is doing 100K an hour. So yeah, all this to say is go all in on short form video, but just be ready to pivot platforms. My wife is an influencer professionally, and she's just pivoted to long form YouTube videos, and it's working way better.
And what about Reels versus TikTok? I mean, I don't even look at TikTok, to be honest, because I just have too much going on, and I'm like, Twitter and Instagram are where I go. And you know, like, gotta be a boon for Meta, right? Totally. I mean, they've been trying to do this anyway. It's just like, it's just gonna all go there, right?
Yeah, Meta is amazing at just integrating more things into Instagram. I mean, Stories added $10 billion in revenue. Reels has added $10 billion in revenue. And they just launched Meta AI Search, where like now you can pull up web results inside of the Instagram app, and like that'll add $10 billion in revenue. Like, I mean, they are going to be the big winner off of this. YouTube will be the big winner. I mean, it's so obvious. And dude, maybe Twitter launches Vine. I mean, that is the OG nostalgia thing. That is like launching MySpace again. I think people would be really lovely. Love that.
Look, I think this is the, when we were, I was thinking about the show we're doing right now, the argument that I'm seeing on Twitter that TikTok won't be banned is, oh, there's too much money on the line. Like, it's too much money. But Sean, the revenue that you just stated is so small relative to so many other players in this space already, like the incumbents, your Facebooks, your Googles. It's actually not that much money. And if you look at what China did ahead of this, they gave themselves legislative like control over, and they have to approve any algorithm sale, right? Like, they basically inserted themselves into this process knowing that it would get to this point. So like, I would say there's a very non-zero chance that TikTok actually goes away in America.
Yeah. I mean, and if you've seen the ramp up, right? Like years ago, there was a ban on 5G technology making its way into China. Okay. Now there's a ban on chip technology going into China. An algorithm is just like the next step in that. It's like the software step in that. And if America got their algorithm, like and like however advanced it is or whatever parameters, or like, you know, there's bans on like AI technology now. Like we're very much in a technology driven cold trade war, something like that, like all those terms put together. So I don't think the algorithm, there's zero chance that it actually ends up getting sold, but I think there's a good chance the asset known as TikTok, with the logo, with the user base, with the shell of it, goes to somebody, because it is $50 billion or whatever. It's like, it's a big transaction. And there are a lot of companies who would love to buy that. Like, you know, antitrust doesn't want Facebook to get it, but Facebook is the obvious best place for it, right? Amazon's a great place for it. Microsoft's a great place for it. Google's a great place for it. And this is where it actually probably breaks down. And like, you could see TikTok leave, because how can America tell a company they can't sell to the highest bidder, where it's worth $50 billion if you're Walmart, but it's worth $150 billion if you're Facebook? And you're like, no, we think Facebook's too powerful. So you're making me sell my thing and I can't sell it to who I want to? What the fuck are you talking about? Like,
yeah, but that doesn't mean they won't. Like, just like, come on, fairness and rationality in government doesn't really exist anymore. So, like, you can't expect it. I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah. We are literally just trying to predict the future now. But I could just see, you know, if you're the Chinese government, you don't care about money all that much. You know what I mean? Like, imagine trying to like talk to like, you know, the Fed about like, dude, I'm like, you'll make a $2 billion. And they're like, yeah, we spend that every fucking second.
They can make more. This is the part that I keep telling people. I'm like, the capitalism arguments, like arguments rooted in capitalism, only make sense when it is between two or more entities that are capitalistic. A government makes their own money as much as they require. We have learned this now. So like $50 billion, it's like, great, I'll see you next Tuesday. I'll just print that.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
They can. So I think that, just to bring it back to like operators and brands though, what happens? What's the second, third order effect if all of these users are gonna now go to something else? And the I think, Jason, like the obvious bet is Meta, right? Like Instagram is going to be the major benefactor here. YouTube Shorts is dog shit compared to TikTok or Instagram Reels. It just is for some reason. What happens to those who spend ad dollars on these platforms? Do we see, you know, you could argue that less competition means that more pricing power for the incumbents. But then you could also, I think, argue that more eyeballs means more ad inventory available. So CPMs could actually go down in the short term if you put all those users onto a Reels.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think, so let's, if you look, just look at the pure math, let's say 25% of users, it gets banned, 25% of users end their way up to Reels, right? So we're saying, you know, we're adding, we'll call it in the order of like between 30 and 50 million people will be spending more time on Instagram Reels. The dollar per revenue that TikTok is extracting is so much lower, right? They made $14 billion in 2023. Meta Q1 revenue was $30 billion, right?
Right.
So the revenue per user is just so much lower that if those people went over to Instagram, you would have more eyeballs with less dollars attached, moving over at the same spend. So I think CPMs do go down. I think it ends up being a net benefit to everybody because Instagram is so much better at serving ads, finding purchasers,
yeah,
everything.
And it's not about users. It's actually, I think it's more about time spent on app. You know, like TikTok grabs hours a day, I think per user. So like those hours per day of those users are gonna have to go somewhere if TikTok disappears. So it's, I like the you know, invest in short form video thing. And then the other part of me is just thinking about like, how does this affect ad auctions on YouTube and Instagram, which is, dude, what's going to gobble up most of this.
Yeah. 1 or 2 year awesome boon. Like we would be so stoked because you get way more users who, you know, probably want to purchase. If you're talking about algorithms, the best algorithm on earth is conversion algorithm from Meta, like yep. getting people to purchase it. But the content algorithm sucks. So if we can get all those people into the Meta ecosystem, we will see low auction prices, low CPMs, probably awesome return on ad spend for these new users. Long-term bad because the duopoly, the monopoly Meta has just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So in 3 years or 4 years or whatever, like Meta is taking up 90% of your spend and they just decide to crank it up a little bit more. But short-term will be fucking awesome.
You know, the thing I was also thinking about, I don't know if you guys have thought about this or had opinion on it, but where TikTok goes is an interesting exercise to think through as a brand. Like TikTok in the hands of an Amazon terrifies the shit out of me more than Meta.
Yeah. Amazon is the best place for it to go. Like,
but that's terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, if you want a healthy landscape that makes a ton of sense, they want to build out a shop feature. They want to build out fulfillment features. Like they want to have content and commerce integrated perfectly. And who has already a diversified business with a social media asset in Twitch, like it going to Amazon makes the most logical sense. And we'll just see if they let it happen.
Yeah. Would you... because I know both of you, I know we do a ton of product seeding for Pelecase, right? We're like, we give product out to creators, creators create content, we use that content in ads, yada, yada, yada. A lot of that content, those creators are on TikTok. The question I was asked probably by somebody on my team is like, do we continue to seed knowing that a lot of content is going to wind up on TikTok, even though that it might go away? You know, like should brands continue these programs for the time being? You know, or would you advise to start trying to push other, like push more towards YouTube, push more towards Instagram, like be more deliberate? Right now, we actually just don't really care. It's like, look, if you're on TikTok, great. If you're on Instagram, great. Like we don't care. Eyeballs are eyeballs.
Really, they have a dedicated team of people, probably 30, 40, 50 reps at this point, who will make sure Northbeam is working correctly and functioning so you can get amazing data out of this ecosystem. They will be more hands-on than any Meta rep will ever be, and they're going to help you understand where your ad dollars are best spent, best positioned, and which ads are working. My team works with the Northbeam team literally every day. They're in my Slack. Maybe you don't get the same level of support as an operator, but they will be there to make sure it's working. And if you're not happy at all, just email Austin. He will take care of you. We use Northbeam every day. It's a benchmarking tool. It's super helpful for forecasting, daily pacing, inter-hour pacing. So we can see like if we just launched an ad in 2 hours, if it's working or not. That's what Northbeam does for us. So thank you, Northbeam, for the support. I'm customer probably number one. So thank you so much.
Well, one thing to add regarding Northbeam, because we just went through a contract renewal with them on their specifically on the MMM. And we got a pretty sweetheart deal, and I expect them to come back to us and raise our price, and they kind of deserve it. I was like, let me reach out to the team, you know, and see how it's going, right? Because I'm not in the day to day. I get feedback, and the team was like, they have improved the MMM so much since we started it that they were like, we should definitely pay for this increase. So. And my team hates every agency and most SaaS. The only person that hates SaaS, the only more than my team is Sean, Frank. But yeah, I mean, they came to us. They're like, hey, you guys got the sweetheart deal. We were one of the first MMM clients. And I was very, very pleased when my team was like, it's really working well for us. So that's my little MMM plug.
Yeah, I think you just have to not care until it actually happens because yeah, eyeballs are still eyeballs, right? Like, and even if it's a sinking ship, you know, so it's the buffet at the Titanic, right? Like it's a sinking ship, but you still got to eat, man. So you
gotta, these people are gonna go somewhere, you know, they're gonna go.
The creators will too, right? Like
the creators are gonna go somewhere. So
the worst thing is that it's going to be the death of a lot of small creators. Because the blessing TikTok was democratized attention, because it was the first time in 2 years an app went from 0 to 100 million users. So all of those users needed to follow new people, and legacy creators were very slow to embrace it. Legacy content was slow to embrace it. So you have people like my wife who has zero social media following, was able to get to 50,000 followers in 2 months or 3 months or whatever, very quickly. It's going to be very hard for all of that tier of creators, people who have 100,000, 500,000, even 1 million or 2 million, if they haven't grown other followings and it goes away, then they're starting over from scratch in a mature system, right? It's very hard to grow in a mature system. So that's who it fucks over the most.
Yeah, those creators, those are the people, and the people who just love TikTok, right? It's gonna suck for them. I really feel bad for them. But it wouldn't be the first time that the government fucked over the people. So
God, this is like a recurring theme with me lately.
Listen, I got another question for you. Like, you mentioned TikTok shops. We just talked about ads. If TikTok shops goes away, do you think that would you say, is TikTok shops more successful than Facebook shops at this point?
Well,
how would you define that?
That's very difficult to say because the strategy is different. So we do way, way more volume through Facebook shops.
Yep.
I mean, like the Meta shopping experience. I mean, at some point it gets to 10% of our volume, which is tens of thousands of dollars a day sometimes, right? Going through that platform. But it's different because it's tied to ad units, right? There is an organic post being like, please shop my Facebook shop or my Instagram shop. It's just a bolt-on shopping experience to ad units, where what TikTok did is they're going to force organic content that contains shops in everybody's feed, right? So they're giving you free distribution tied to it. So if the question is which one is more successful, I would say which one is more sustainable. And it's obvious that just including it in your ads it's not taking away from the organic content experience. It's not shoving more ad units in. So somebody said that 70% of all content on TikTok is monetized in some way, either influencer posts, TikTok posts, or ads. And that is unsustainable. And I think that is, if you do that for long enough, people will just leave your platform in droves. So I think Meta's is more sustainable in the long run, but it's just, once again, TikTok's whole thing is being very fast to grow, right? Tons of users added immediately, tons of shop revenue added immediately. So they're way more of a blitzkrieg.
I've always wondered if it's like, it almost seems that TikTok, the incentives are weirdly misaligned between the brand and the platform, like, or even the creator and the platform. You know, the creators think it's great that they get all this fast and cheap reach, you know, like the organic reach. But then it's so not sustainable that, and it's not hard to see, like if you've been in this game long enough, it's not hard to see where TikTok is going. They're trying to get to what Facebook is, right? Facebook did the same thing early on. Your organic reach on Instagram was amazing until they just started to dial up advertising and dial down organic. Yeah. Like TikTok's gonna do the same thing. So you're almost better off as a brand operating in the mature system. It's more predictable, it's more scalable, and your incentives are weirdly aligned.
Yeah, in the mature system, it's a value exchange for dollars. And if you have dollars, you get the value you want, right? That's the beauty of a mature system. I want to bring up the sustainability point again, because TikTok Shop is successful because they just make shit hella cheap by subsidizing it. that's not a system. We've seen that system play out a lot of times where eventually it's just not going to work. The whole idea is to get people like so addicted to it that like even when it's expensive that they'll shop, but that just hasn't proven to always work in the long run.
I think Amazon's the only one who has proven that they could eat, like they could do the milk in the back of the store thing. They could make it super cheap for so long that eventually they raise prices and people still shop there, even though it's more expensive to shop on Amazon.
Yeah. But it's like, even there's so much nuance, because what they made cheap was value, right? Like through this fast shipping, where it's like, we'll get it. Like the prices were always normal, but they're like, we're going to deliver value in this other way, this X factor way, where it wasn't just like buy shit for a penny, buy shit for a dollar. Like that is like Temu and TikTok Shop feel exactly the same. It's like, look, things cannot be a dollar forever. But anyway, Jason, any last minute thoughts? And then Matt, any last minute thoughts?
I was just thinking about the fact that we're on episode 54, guys. We are officially through a year in this thing.
Yeah. Dude, some reflections. Do you have any reflections the past year of doing it?
I mean, it's just, I wonder why the hell people want to hear us. That's what I think. No, it's really, it's incredible. It's been really, it's so fun to have people really get value out of this. When we started this, we were like, yeah, we want to democratize the big dog chat, but like, there's no way that we can have everyone in this. And I think we've done it. I think there's a lot more to do here. But I want to compliment you guys and thank you guys for your commitment and effort in this. It's been a really fun run. I'm looking forward to the next 54 episodes.
Yeah, dude. I think by episode 100, we'll be really good at podcasting. So I think
I don't know, man. That's bullish.
I think it takes about 100 episodes.
No, I think Jason's hit it. I mean, it's been a lot of fun to just hang out and chat. I mean, I'm blown away by how many people tune in and listen and watch. It's still like, I look at the numbers and I'm like, holy shit, this is clearly we're doing something.
It's got to be helping Mike Beckham's gubernatorial campaign as well, because I think he's going to Washington.
Mike Beckham
now.
For president.
He's on. I mean, he's got my vote for any office. President, yeah, heck yeah. That would be awesome.
Dude, but, I mean, we're joking, but he's in D.C. right now. It wouldn't surprise me if they're trying to get him to run for Congress. If they're like, okay, all right, Mike, you got the money, you got the podcast, let's get you in office, dude. And then he's going to have to drop out.
We were talking about politics, I don't know, somewhere like over the weekend, and like how, you know, basically, oh, you know what it was? I went to the Grove yesterday, and, you know, Rick Caruso owns the Grove, and he ran for mayor in LA, and he, I don't know how, but he actually lost, which is crazy. But maybe it's not so crazy, but I felt like he was the perfect candidate because he was already incredibly successful and he didn't seem like a guy with a massive ego or narcissism complex. And the problem now, and this is why Mike would be great, because I don't think he has those either. The problem is like anyone who runs for office right now, it's like there's just it's either massive ego or a massive desire to make money, because these guys all make a ton of money once they're successful in politics. Even if they lose elections, they raise so much money during the election. But so vote for Mike, whatever he decides to run.
Whatever Mike does.
Yeah, for the 15 people who listen in Kansas, please vote for Mike. Or I guess Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. Sean doesn't even know what state. And Sean is from fucking, where are you from? Are you from Iowa or something?
Washington State.
Oh, okay. I thought you were from Iowa. Sorry. All right.
This is like, you guys just had the most California moment ever. Yeah. Okay, so shout out to Sendlane, who's one of our sponsors, the pod. Just the team over there is incredible. What we want to hit on today while I'm talking about Sendlane, because this is actually kind of cool, is Sendlane is actually going to make migration a little easier for you. Migrating email platforms, SMS platforms, is a giant pain in the ass. So what Sendlane is doing is they are saying that we will not start billing you until you actually start sending email, SMS. So they want you warmed up. They want you making money before they charge you. That's a pretty incredible offer when you think about it. The team over there's support is legendary. Everybody in the industry kind of knows that at this point. So if you haven't checked out Sendlane, please go do so.
I came across a really interesting brand recently.
And
I was
you wanted to do this. My bad.
I was sort of thinking that we can do this and not to pick any of our friends, because we have a lot of friends whose brands we love, right? Like I'm wearing Cuts right now. I love Cuts. I love Western Rise. You know, I love Ridge. But to find brands that are doing something really interesting or unique and have reached a level of success. So like 50 million plus, nine-figure brand that is really interesting, but it's not like a public company, not like doesn't have massive notoriety. I think we should, because you can learn from those brands. Like what I'm trying to do is find brands that are doing things well, different, but are big enough that I can learn from them. And don't hate me because it's golf related. All right. There's a brand called Malbon. Has anyone ever heard of Malbon Golf? No.
Yeah, they're like streetwear meets golf. It's very cool.
Yeah. And I figured Sean, I was hoping to stump Sean on this one, but he's such a savant. Cool. So obviously I can't. But Sean and I know a guy called Josh Takeman, and Josh introduced me to Steven Malbon, the founder. He and his wife started the company. And I was like, what is the deal with this brand? Like, what is it? It's clothes are like, I never see anyone wearing them. And then, you know, like all of a sudden I'm at Manuel, a restaurant in the Arts District in LA. And I see an Asian couple. And they're like decked out in like this it says Malbon all over. But it's like, is that golf wear? Is it streetwear? Like, what is it? And I met Steven, and he's like this really interesting character, totally interesting guy. Like, he's definitely a guy you want to like to hang out with. And then I realized that their business is absolutely massive in Asia. And there's a place right across the street from me that at my LA spot that do like these streetwear drops, and people line up down the street like once a month. They'll like camp out overnight for a drop. And so obviously Hexclad, not in the apparel business. Although we do have some pretty awesome merch, which I got like right here. You see the Hexclad cooking division, right there. But like taking something like golf, which is pretty stodgy, and turning it into streetwear, and like go to their website and try to buy something in your size, Matt. Sean, like,
I'm on right now. Everything's
sold. Try to find something in a freaking medium.
Everything's sold.
I'm trying to get like my wife some golf wear, right? Trying to get her to play. And it's like, I can't even get anything in her size.
Wow.
It's crazy. And it's just a really, really interesting story it's limited drops. It's collabs. There's like a new collab every few weeks. He's collabing with everyone. Nike, Adidas, Tag Heuer.
Us the Supreme vibes.
It's really, really. I mean, it's very fucking cool what this brand has done. It's
absolutely.
Although I will say, I think they're wasting money on retargeting ads because I keep getting their ads for the same shit that don't have in my size. So I don't know how you fix that, but other than that, I love what they're doing.
That's why fashion's hard, man. Totally. Right there.
And Jason, if you like them, I think there's this movement to make golf way more streetwear focused. You should check out Tyler, the Creator's brand, Golf Le Fleur. It is very similar, and what they're doing is like bringing prep culture into modern, you know, either hip hop or streetwear culture. So lots of cool stuff happening in the apparel space. Mine is also in the apparel space. I was going to say Mad Happy, but you said no friends, and I think we're familiar with them. I think Mad Happy, if you go to any of their pop-up store locations, is really great. They have a cafe in LA that like just feels very positive. There's a lot of buzz around it. But I want to say Rude, RHUDE. I was at Coachella, and it seems to be the new hot brand. Like, you know, if you're in the artist section or the guest section or behind the scenes, it is all over the place. Like, and it's been around for, you know, I think since 2015. The founder went to go to Bailey for a little bit. He did a couple collections there, and he's back doing his own thing at Rude. And so this is if you're in the know, you're going to be like, this isn't like everyone fucking knows about this. But if you're an up and comer, I would watch them like the next Supreme, like the next Kith, like the next, any cool brand. So that's my shout out. Shout out Rude.
You know what you said? What the interesting thing about these businesses, though, and what most impressed me about Malbon was the size and scale of their business. Like, it's nine figures plus. And Mad Happy is an awesome business. I don't think they're nine figures. Super cool vibes. And I don't know about the Rude, how big they are. I know you like to talk about James Peirce. And this just sort of reminded me of how, like, you know, you can build something special like this in many different ways.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing about like fashion. You can very quickly get to $100 or $200 million. And you saw this with all the jeans companies. There was a jeans boom in like 2010, basically. You can get to hundreds of millions of dollars based off of wholesale and demand or whatever. And it's just really hard to keep that for 5 years in a row, right? And it's very hard to take it to the next level, because with fashion, as soon as you get to $300 or $500 million, you're mainstream, and then you can lose all your cool. So that's like, that's like the one challenge. I think Kith is navigating that right now. I think they're going to be probably $200 million this year. And like, how do you continue to get more of the market and still be cool? And I think James Purse has done a great job not growing that market, just being like, we're doing exactly this the rest of the time. Matt, what's your cool brand?
Teenage Engineering.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's just, I don't know, aesthetically, I just think it's so fucking cool.
I'm so not cool because I don't know either. I don't know that one. I don't know Rude.
I
gotta step it up.
It was a shout out to Metab. He was the one who told me about it. Like, just as a weird, you know, off the wall. I mean, like months ago, he turned me on to this company, and their products are just so freaking rad looking. The site's weird. Everything about them is weird. I love it. And I have no idea how big they are. If you're listening to this and you are from this company, I'd love to know more about the business. I just love the design of the whole thing.
Yeah, Jason. So it's like tech forward gadgets, but like done in a very fun way. Like they just did the rabbit. Yeah, they did the rabbit, which I have one, which sucks. Like it's like the little AI tool. Like mine is horrible. I don't know if I got a broken one or not, but it looks cool. It's like orange. It has a little scroll wheel. So think of like a Game Boy, but like that DNA taken over to like microphones and computer stands and that type of shit.
Speakers and shit. Yeah, it's just cool.
Dude, all great brands.
All right, that's a wrap. That's episode 54. That was a lot of fun. I feel a little more informed on what's going on in the land of TikTok and how I should be reacting as a brand and as an operator. I hope you found that helpful. As always, big shout out and thanks to the sponsors of the pod, Sendlane, Fulfill, and Northbeam. So thanks for tuning in. We've also been here a year, a little over a year now. So thanks for being a subscriber. If you're not a subscriber and you're listening to this, go hit the subscribe button on Spotify or YouTube. We never ask to do that. We're terrible podcast people, but please go do that right now. Thanks for tuning in.